Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, not many Australians would be happier than this man, Network 10 and Paramount football expert Andy Harper. Andy, thanks again for your time. Just take us through the emotions a couple of hours after that.
Come on, Shags.
Geez, I don't know what to say. I mean, this is seriously up there. There's so many things to talk about this performance and how this group has finished and how the players have got back together. And they've scraped themselves off a rather bloody canvas, which was the case after the France match. I mean, it's just been incredible. It's been an incredible 6 months, really, given how the team qualified and now into the round of 16. Just quite remarkable. And Matthew Leckie's goal was just sheer brilliance, really. Hadn't had a great game till then. That's the bizarre thing. You know, Leckie had sort of struggled a little bit, but this moment came to put the entirety of the Australian nation on his shoulders and carry the football for 50 metres, beat two defenders, and then slot the ball with 26 million people sitting on his shoulders. Incredible.
Andy, what were you thinking? Thanks for being available to us too, by the way. So I'm sure you're doing it on the smell of an oily rag at the moment, like most of us. But what were you thinking 25 minutes in?
Well, I was thinking it's going to be a matter of time, to be honest. It was going to be a matter of time. Because even through the rest of the game, Denmark just controlled the game, but they were controlling the game in that opening half hour with a real menace about them. And we did ride our luck. Matt Ryan made a couple of good reflex saves, a couple of late interceptions. And the 30 minutes, you're thinking, geez, we hope the boys can hold on. Because at that point, you're still flirting with it. We just need a draw. Just hang in there, boys. Wait for I to say this. You've only got another hour to hang on here. Another hour. Christ's sake. I mean, who says that to people? It just became apparent from then that, the Socceroos were just getting this resilience about them. Denmark started running out of ideas. And I commented to my wife about 30 minutes in. They just started to lose their edge. And, mate, I dead set was getting the champagne ready with 75 minutes played. I know we just had the one goal lead. Then, of course, Tunisia scored against France and everyone's sphincters just started going 100 miles an hour. At 75 minutes, I thought, I'm going to put the cue in the rack here. These guys are cooked. Denmark have got no answers. And they really didn't. Australia just suffocated them. They fell into our trap. Harry Souttar and the rest of the team were massive. And it really is just quite the surreal experience this morning.
Gee, the ref was quick on the whistle when he called that penalty.
Oh, boy.
Thank God.
Which penalty?
The one that was overturned. It was overturned because it was offside. But, geez, he was quick to blow the whistle.
Yeah. Oh, look, I know. I know he was, mate, but you know what? I've already consigned that to my memory's dustbin, which is a growing camp.
It needs to be purged every now and again. What were we all thinking in the last 15 minutes? So we've got the goal lead. We've been hanging on. We've sort of matched them in the first half an hour of the second half. We played some really nice football, and then. They bring the extra defender on and then we're just sort of like we're just waiting for them to kind of score and we're all doing the maths in our head, and as you said, Tunisia are up and goal difference was going to be our friend and all the rest of it. How did you cope with the last sort of 10 or 15 minutes?
Well, reasonably comfortably, Cocker, actually. But everyone's watching this through different eyes. And I'm watching this through a Danish team who've just had the wind taken out of their sail.
Yeah.
Whilst we as Socceroos fans are desperate not to concede a goal and get the draw, the decision, the mentality for Denmark was completely different. And you could see it, their fans were feeling it too. A draw was no good to them.
Yeah.
You know, they somehow had to see their way to scoring two goals. And whilst we were nervous about the concession of one, the likelihood of Denmark scoring even that one was reducing by the minute. Because they were just losing belief that they were going to get what they needed ultimately, which was a win. A win was the only thing that was going to save Denmark. And that was from, I reckon, it was about from 75, 76 minutes in. It just went for me and I thought, but they don't think they can do it. They're not going through the motions. They're trying as hard as they can. but they've lost their imagination, they've lost their belief. In the end, when you're just lumping balls into the penalty area and getting real desperate, straight onto the bonce of a guy whose standing height is 2 metres tall.
I mean,
you've run out of ideas.
Yeah. He was magnificent, wasn't he? He was sensational.
We're speaking to Network 10 and Paramount Plus football expert Andy Harper. I'm going to give you two words, Andy. Graham Arnold.
Well, he continues to defy. That's more than two words.
That's a good point.
He's credit where it's due for Graham Arnold, who's a coach who polarises the football cognoscenti. There are those for and those against, and like the political debate, it's a very binary one. People can't be moved from their camp. But I have to just like the performance to get through the qualifiers, those last qualifiers, and to steal the team and to bring the team with him and to set the atmosphere for this team to deliver what they've done and achieve their own slice of history. He deserves full credit. Incredible, incredible coaching achievement from him. People are going to start talking about the round of 16 in 2006, the old golden generation. What do we do with that term now? Because none of these players are playing in the big five leagues of Europe. Eight of the squad are out of the A-League. Are Australians prepared to call a team that gets to the round of 16 now with a significant slice of the team in the A-League or straight out of it the golden generation? Well, that's the test for us.
It's a good question. Someone needs to do a kind of PhD on this, though, Harps. And you go back 20 years when we had, you know, these big leagues stacked with Australian talent, and we don't now. But what's happened in the world of football in the last two decades, has it changed so much that it's actually harder? Is it harder to get a spot at Leeds now than it was, you know, when Harry and Viduka were doing it? You know, Asia and Europe, Africa have emerged. And are there more good players on the planet now than there were 20 years ago? I don't know the answer to these questions, but maybe it's a bit harder.
It's harder for us because we don't have a Kuehl or a Viduka. And irrespective of how monumental this achievement is overnight by the current Socceroos, there's not a Kuehl or Viduka talent. Technical talent, athletic talent in Harry Kuehl's case, in that group. So what's made it more difficult for the Socceroos is we don't have the smattering of elite talent, which is actually attracting the attention of Europe. You see, here's the thing. A lot of this stuff, in particular in a global marketplace, and particularly in a game with fine margins where stats don't drive everything, perception counts. When Harry Kuehl comes onto the scene, English soccer, and I remember it well, English soccer changed its view on Australian players overnight. The arrival of Harry Kuehl as a youngster to Leeds set the place on fire here with English interest, right? And what they realised, having had their perception changed, that there was a lot of great quality. And an army of players then was starting to get staffed, and they proved they could do it. They were great value talents. What's harder for our guys now is we don't have those really top individuals who are changing that perception. And so now the perception of us has dropped back as we're not really a talent pool to go and crawl necessarily. Now that then is coupled with the fact that the local scene hasn't nearly got the investment required, and this is a constant battle for the game. And, you know, Australia enjoys these incredible, unprecedented runs for global notoriety through the Soccer World Cup. We love it as a country. Yeah. Then when the circus rolls out of town, we just leave soccer to itself. And we expect our kids and men and women to go out and represent us on the world stage, you know, with a pair of blunt scissors in a machine gun fight. That's the comparison. So it's real difficult for the players. The perception's changed. We will start to develop some exciting talent over time. That's what happens. And those perceptions will change again. And compared to the investments around Asia, I mean, the level of investment, just staggering, what other countries are doing to develop their talent and be part of the global football scene, mate. That's what they say. Like Qatar, I know that all the controversy, but let's just look at this number. Qatar World Cup has been a $500 billion exercise.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. $500 billion
exercise. Now, this is the world in which our guys and girls, our Socceroos, Matildas, this is the world in which they work. This is what they're up against. We sit down here, you know, in our budgie smugglers having a cold one on the beach, turn on the radio. How are the soccer wogs going? Oh, geez, they got toweled up again. Without any real idea of how hard this is and the levels of investment, where our country stands in driving the important issues in facilities, in making sure kids have fields to play on, that we can get coaches out to kids. It's just left to itself. But we expect these people, like I said, and I'm not mincing my words, Matthew Leckie carries that, picks up that ball on halfway, and for 50 metres he's got 26 million people on his shoulder. And what have we done as a country to get in there? Good luck, boy. Off you go. But now we're pretty happy to
She does a fair bit in
so
there.
So saying all that, Andy, and going back to your original point, we don't have a Kewell or Viduka. Is getting through the group stage at this World Cup the Socceroos' finest achievement?
It's not quite. I've still got the Asian Cup there. Because you talk about perceptions and context, and Jules, you know, it's three group games at a World Cup, and they're mighty to get there. Point one, congratulations. You know, how strong is this group? When it boils down to how strong was Denmark as a team going in, big raps. Denmark leave this World Cup bottom of the group. Tunisia weren't a fantastic team necessarily. Great fighters, like unbelievable fighters. So, you know, how strong was this group compared to the Japan, Korea, Brazil group of 2016? And then the whole achievement of winning the Asian Cup. So, to me, that's still the pinnacle because there's a trophy, a significant trophy at the end of it. But I'm prepared to say that, God willing, Australia plays Argentina in the round of 16. A Lionel Messi led Argentina for his World Cup swan song. If Graham Arnold can pull one more rabbit out of the hat and these players can roll their sleeves up and say, up yours, and get over that one, that'll be the greatest ever then. Undisputed in my mind.
I don't think anyone could argue against that.
No, and that would it defies the levels of imagination and capable of wondering how we respond to that right now if it was to be the case. We'll just have to let that happen and see how the cards fall if and when it happens. Harps, you know, the banter that you gave before and the one you just gave to Julio and the Asian Cup and this, we've got a great women's team and we've got the best female player, you know, one of the best female players on the planet and all this. And here we are and the game, as you say, is left to its own devices too often. How does it change?
You know what it changes? You know what not needs to change? It needs elected officials to start with. It needs elected officials to start with to say, I'm going to sign a check, much like John Howard did to get the A-League going, right? That's the sort of leadership, believe it or not, from one of the most conservative blue blood prime ministers Australia's ever had. It was John Howard who signed the cheque to unleash the A-League and that whole revolution, right? That's the sort of leadership that required from the very top to say, you know what, in the service of the national interest, the most important sport that we do, it might be the one that everyone likes most.
No, I get that. You're right.
I'm not even saying the single most important sport we have to do much better at is soccer. We have to do it as a country if we want to be globally competitive. We have to do it. So we need a political leader at the very top of the tree who says, mate, I don't care about the lobby groups who are going to be bashing my door down saying, you can't give them this, what about us, blah, blah, blah. No. That's what it's going to require, Cocker. Mm. Does anyone in our political situation have the balls to do that?
Well, the world is more divided for a whole lot of reasons than it ever is. Than it's ever been right now, and yet you look at the scenes at Fed Square this morning, and you at 2 o'clock you look at Twitter, and everybody's on the same page, and it's because of a bunch of ragtag soccer players who wear the green and gold. This team unites Australia like no other sporting team, like no other sporting team.
Nothing. But Cocker, this is the thing. Everyone, the people of Australia sent it. Even if soccer's not their go-to sport, even if they didn't grow up with it, even if they don't like it particularly, although there are millions of people who do. My point is, as soon as a politician sticks their head up and says, we're going to do this for soccer, the phone rings off the hook, the lobby groups start. This assassination campaign on the game has been going on for decades. It just has. I mean, this is not me bleating. It's just a fact. How can it be otherwise when sport is basically run by volunteers in Australia, that the biggest volunteer movement in this country, club soccer and participant soccer, is still left on the periphery with no fields to play on. I mean, it's ridiculous. Women don't have change rooms to get dressed in. It's scandalously under-resourced. Scandalously. Forget the positioning yourself on the sports globe. What about keeping people active?
Mm.
The single sport that keeps most people connected and active is soccer. You have to get your begging bowl out to get stuff funded. It's ridiculous. We all know this is true. You flick that to your comments about Twitter and Fed Square and this, that and the other. Australians realise it. I don't think they're going to need convincing. They just need someone at the top who's not going to be scared of taking on their powerful mates and sign a cheque or a series of cheques to build this properly.
Well, Andy, I think the A-League needs convincing because they obviously had no faith we were going to make it through to the round of 16. It returns this weekend. What's going on there?
Well, I can't wait for that. Mate. Well,
thought we were coming home after the group stage, did they? The powers that be.
They did. Well, who hand on heart didn't? Who didn't think that was going to be the case?
Yeah, no, fair.
Because it's exceeded effective. Everyone's expectations. They've still got a business to run. And they're an incredibly important part of the puzzle. And I can't wait for the return of the action in the men's sense. Of course, the women are on again this weekend on Paramount Plus and 10 Play, and that's a great local competition as well. But, you know, this is going to get everyone talking. The debate's raging again. And honestly, guys, if Australia wants to go with the rest of the world and you know, the days of, in relative terms, sport is a cottage industry in Australia. It's a cottage industry. Phil Kearns set this on fire a few years ago with the whole Olympic thing. This is true. It's just true. Our ability to compete in significant international events is getting more and more difficult with each Olympic and World Cup soccer cycle because we still expect volunteers to deliver world champions and to do it without much help. And that's got to change.
Good stuff.
Good stuff, yep. Andy. Thanks for your time. Love the passion. Let's enjoy the next few days and build up to Argentina in one of the biggest games of soccer we've ever played, let's be honest.
Lionel who?
Yeah,
who? He's washed up. He's washed up. Thanks for your time, Harps.
All right, see you, boys.
Good on you, mate.